Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's great to see you all again. We have a great Red Ice interview lined up for you guys today. So it was a pleasure having you with us. If you're joining us on BitChute or maybe Library, obviously redice.tv and redicemembers.com, two websites where you can find all our content, all our material. We have Frodi Midjord back on the show today. Hey, Frodi, how's it going?
Hey, it's always good to be back on Red Ice. I'm always a huge fan, and I'm sorry if I caused you guys to be banned from YouTube last time I was on, because I remember that it was right after my video came out that very day. It's like, it's banned. And I was like, oh, was it something I said? I hope not. It's just a coincidence.
Was it the same
day? It was actually the last video you put out when you were banned. Ah. That was the previous interview with me. I hope there's no causal link between those two things.
No. I mean, it doesn't matter what you do. You're going to be banned eventually anyway. And I think everyone else is going to be banned too. I mean, we're already shadow banned. We're limited with all those kinds of things. I remember Ed Dutton said the same thing. I think we got a strike on the interview that we did with him. And, it's a good point, but I mean, these are the times we're in. Either we begin to self-censor ourselves to such a degree that we can't even, and many are, of course, already, but to such a degree that we cannot even express and accurately talk about what's happening. And to a certain extent, unfortunately, that's true if you're still on YouTube. Nothing to apologize for. These things happen. Obviously, we're the publishers. If we didn't agree with something, not that we would censor it, but you know, there's other ways. At least on YouTube, you can do it. We've done that in the past, actually. We've done a little cut just for YouTube, you know what I mean? So that you can limit certain things, and then you do the full thing on BitChute or whatever. But no.
I don't think we talked about anything especially controversial.
No,
it's like just a regular conversation, but you never know when these things happen. I was kind of shocked when it happened, because I was sharing the link with my friends, because I really enjoyed the show. It was a really good episode. So I was happy with it, and I was sharing the link, and all of a sudden it just stopped working. You know, it was just a few hours afterwards, and well, it's gone, and the whole channel is gone all of a sudden. So,
Yeah, that's it. And I think you speculated in that we showed some of the because there was a couple of videos there at the event in Denmark where there were some Antifas and stuff like that. And again, I wouldn't be surprised. You have a lot of those kinds of people on the back end of the YouTubes. They support these people, and if you showed their faces, maybe that was an issue. I still don't know. That's the bottom line, right? We were never given any information regarding why. And this is how they treat people. This is why they deleted, of course, James Alsup. True News, I think, most recently was yanked. Not sure if you're familiar with them, but they cover a lot of good Zionism, anti-Zionism stuff, and President Trump and stuff like that. And they were just yanked from the platform. No reasons given. And unfortunately, I think that's the future that we are looking at on these big major platforms. That's why we're very fortunate to have things like BitChute and, for now at least, DLive. Library, I keep plugging that. It's an excellent service. BitTorrent, decentralized. They are pro free speech, the guys that run and operate it. So I think we're going to be fine. It's going to be a short-term limitation, Frodi, in terms of like how we can disseminate and get our word out and get our political message out there and continue to participate in the political dialogue while our enemies calls it hate speech in order to legitimize shutting us down, right?
Yeah, I mean, and still, like I've said every time I've been on your show, I remember back when dissident ideas were just disseminated by magazines that you had to order on mail order before the internet was really big and like an everyday thing, and that reached a few hundred people, and you're still reaching tens of thousands. So I mean, we're still making huge progress if you just look at it over a longer timeline.
Yeah, absolutely, exactly. And that's what I think. Short term, it will continue to hurt us. But it's not that the world is not going in this direction, right? The problems are mounting up. The people out there, they want answers. They want solutions. They want to have vocabulary to accurately describe what it is that they're seeing and the solutions. What do we do about this? How do we solve it? This can't continue. That's why the trend is going in our direction. If the left was successfully operating our countries and society or the globe, you know, there would be a harder time for us to legitimately put out our ideas. Even if the globalist utopia that they have planned for us was successful, you know, then it would be much harder for us to kind of give out information about it. Luckily, I guess, can say that it's just a disaster, and this thing is being run into the ground, which causes more people to come to our content and to our material.
Yeah, the demand is just going to continue going up because the problems are getting worse out there, and the confidence in the mainstream media is going to continue going down. So I mean, all you were here to say, I'm here to stay, and all of the other, you know, channels and all of the other peoples who are speaking the truth are here to stay. We're not going anywhere, and so it doesn't work. Deplatforming us doesn't work. We're going to continue what we do.
Exactly, it doesn't work. They think it does short term. So tell us a little bit what you've been up to. I know that you're over in the Baltic states, which is was great to hear a little bit about off the record here before we started up. I've been through, I think, through Lithuania, I think, many years ago, but very quick, brief, just driving in. I've always wanted to go. The Baltic states have, of course, always, I guess from a Swedish perspective, it's always been kind of, well, to be honest, looked down upon, actually. And we there's a lot of politicians in Sweden that I remember looking back that were essentially running some of those countries. They put puppets in place, politicians, at least the industry, from the industry perspective. There were a lot of, I think, Swedish production or some companies were set up there, and they were kind of, I always heard this, that Swedish the Swedes kind of utilized or used the Baltic states a little bit to their advantage. Well, I don't know if you know anything about that, but tell us about your trip there and your impressions going through the Baltic states.
Yeah, I mean, I also remember, just as you said, that back in the day, as I remember growing up in Sweden, the Baltic states were described as very, you know, behind in the development. They were underdeveloped in a way. They were poorer than Scandinavia, and like you said, unfortunately, somehow looked down upon. But now, compared to Scandinavia, they are virtually paradise. They're a paradise. Like I said, yeah, I flew into Lithuania, and I was there. I was invited to give a speech at a metapolitical event called Kryptis. It's a group of young people organizing a metapolitical event, and I was there alongside some other speakers. Jared Taylor was there last year, and Greg Johnson as well. And I was there speaking. There was a former diplomat from America who has Lithuanian origins. Lots of good people speaking, and Tina Vik was also a speaker. She does Happy Homelands together with Ramsey Paul, and we had this event, and the first major difference between Vilnius, having an event in Vilnius, and having an event in Stockholm or Copenhagen, is that the venue was announced in public beforehand. So it was just published on Facebook. Here's the venue. Here's when we're going to meet. And of course, no one came to disturb the event or tried to disturb the event. No state interference trying to shut down the event. We just came there. It was very nice. It's a very nice city, Vilnius. It's my first time in Vilnius. And we had this event. We spoke at a hotel, in a conference hall, in a hotel in central town, and filmed the events. I think they were live streamed on Monokulturi, which is the Finnish live stream of Tina Vik and Jonas Lokka. So we were there for a few days, and then we had a torchlit march, because the occasion was the Independence Day. So when Lithuania became independent from the Soviet Union and from communism and from Russia. So it's their Independence Day, and we had about 2,000 people in this torchlit march. Actually, it was the Latvians in Riga who started the tradition of having torchlit marches. But their Independence Day is in November, but the Independence Day in Latvia and in Lithuania and in Estonia are in February, just a week apart. So they have. I spoke at both events. That's why I was there for 10 days. So we had a torchlit march, some great speeches. And we talked to some you know, local politicians there, spent a few days there. And then we drove up, me and a couple of friends, together with Tina Vik and Jonas Lokka, we drove up to Riga and spent a few days there. There was no real event there, but it's, you know, it's also an ethnic state, an ethno state, basically. You just see white people, North Europeans. And that is the first thing that strikes you. And it's, you know, it's very affordable for people who earn a Western wage. But it isn't run down. Many people might believe, at least if you, you know, remember the sort of talking points that you mentioned earlier from maybe the 80s and the 90s about the Baltic states, that it's kind of poor and run down. Not at all. It's modern, very nice, very, you know, very, very clean. I don't know, you know, it's very nice looking. It's very nice building and nice architectures. They're both these, or all three of these capital cities have their old towns, which with like medieval buildings, and they keep their traditions alive. These were the countries that were the last countries in Europe to become Christian. I think Lithuania was Christianized almost in the 1400s. I think 1380 is the like official date. So we spent a few days in Riga. I interviewed Jonas Locke about some things that he's done, and I'm going to publish that interview soon. And because he has he exposed a grooming scandal similar to the one in Rotherham that happened in North Finland, because he's a local politician in Oulu in North Finland, and people came up to him and said, you know what, my daughter was raped in a park, and the media is just silent about it. Can you do something about this? So he exposed this scandal, and this, it became a huge thing in the Finnish media, and even the police were complicit in covering up some of these crimes. And so we made an interview about that. And then we moved on to Tallinn, Estonia. And this is an interesting thing, because the organization that organizes this conference in Tallinn, Estonia, is called Blue Awakening. And the conference is called Ethno Future. So I was speaking there, and this Blue Awakening is the youth wing of a government party. It's a coalition government, and the government party is called ECRE, a conservative, explicitly nationalist party, and their youth wing is organizing this conference. And they invited me, and I spoke there alongside the Minister of Finance in the country. And, I mean, just that is enough to sort of blow your mind if you're right from Scandinavia, right?
Yeah.
Because, right.
That
I mean...
That wouldn't happen.
That wouldn't happen, and...
Unfortunately.
When we had a conference in Oslo in early November, just last year, just a few months ago, we got some letters from because Greg Johnson was arrested. I guess he's been on your show, so your audience knows this. He was arrested by the security service, and we got the letters, the orders from the security service about his arrest, and they say explicitly in the letters, I read it myself, and I translated it because it's in Norwegian, so I translated it for Greg. They say explicitly that they didn't arrest him to prevent any crime. They arrested him to prevent nationalism and identitarianism from gaining a foothold in the country.
Have you published that letter?
It's published. Yes, it is on Countercurrents.
Okay, I gotta see that. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really great. So they say explicitly, wow, that they arrested him because they were afraid that if he was allowed to give his speech, that would contribute to nationalism getting a foothold in the country. And I've talked a lot about this after the event, because, you know, that's admitting totalitarianism. That's admitting that they don't want an open debate. They want to silence the political opposition. So these sort of anti-terror measures, that they are not to prevent crime. They are to prevent open discussions. Yes.
This one, right?
That's part of it. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A closed society. Okay. Well, because that's important, because of course we heard in the wake of that, because of the arrests and stuff, that, well, he was a supporter of Breivik, so he was a dangerous individual. Even check this out. This is how the domino effect of this results. We were banned from Facebook because Lana had Greg Johnson on after all this happened to explain what happened. Mm-hmm. And Facebook then could go on and say, we're an organized hate group that support terrorism because we had Greg Johnson on. This is how dishonest they are. This is how they operate, and they use anything they can. But what I'm saying, why I'm interested in that, is that puts a different spin on it, because if that's what the Norwegian authorities said regarding it, then they can't use that as an excuse. Not that that matters.
Exactly.
Truth never matters. They do things anyway. They just say so and then they act on it. But regardless, at least for the sake of truth and accuracy, we have settled that then. So interesting.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's important, because although it doesn't matter to them, it matters to a lot of people. And it's very important that if we can point to various things that have been said very explicitly by the security service. And I didn't even know this article was published, because I was writing a second part to it, and just a lot of other stuff came between. But yeah, and there's another article published by Greg Johnson with the, it's called the PST something. PST is the police security service in Norway. So you can find that article, something with the security service, in the title.
I'll look for the title. Right.
Anyhow, the point is that they actively try to prevent people from speaking their minds. And here I can speak alongside the Minister of Finance, and they have an explicitly nationalist policy, and they are proud of having an ethno state. And the other thing is that this man in the government, he didn't come in an armored truck. Followed by a dozen security service, that bodyguards, because that's not necessary, because it's a safe country, because that's what you get in an ethno state. It's a safe country. These men are men of the people. They're not hated by the people, so they can have a normal functioning society that we used to have back in, a few decades ago, before everything just collapsed.
I was just going to say that, like, the Baltic state is what Scandinavia used to be. Right. Yeah. And again, it's very interesting. I mean, I've seen this now over the course of about two and a half decades, where Sweden obviously is the worst hit, but even Denmark and Norway now are bad hit. Finland is getting there. The Baltic states are not. But as our countries are plummeting, partially because of the, median IQ and all these things go down, it's more violence, it's more disruption, the having a multi-religious, multi-ethnic society is causing conflict. So, just a decade ago, two decades ago, world leaders were looking to Sweden as a model society. The social democratic order that they had there, these are peaceful countries, they've successfully had a welfare model that works, all this kind of stuff, right? Now we don't hear that too much. Now it's like, we're talking about Denmark instead. And then, it's the same thing. Now Poland is the safest country, one of the safest countries in Europe, where they used to be bad economically off. It's because all these other countries that used to be on top have now been ruined and dragged down to the bottom, not to the bottom maybe, but getting there, to the middle of these charts and everything else. And so because the Baltic states have just remained what they are and continued on the path forward, which they were going to reach eventually anyway, now they're on top. They're the safest countries. They're doing well economically. And the world is like, you can't seriously wonder why this is at this point, right? This is all the proof that we need in front of us, that ethnically homogenous nations are much more successful and safer places for everybody, for our kids, for the elderly and all that stuff. And this is the proof we need,
It's it proves the lie of the social economic factors or whatever. These were poor countries, but they had an identity, they had a cohesion, and they had the foundation that you need to actually have a society, which is ethnic homogeneity. You belong to the same society, you share the same interests, and you want sort of the same things. You're moving in the same direction. If you have a society divided by different ethnic groups, it's going to be tribal warfare. This cosmopolitan, multicultural mega city with the police state that has to protect every politician and everything, because it's just complete chaos and it doesn't work. People try to claim that we want something tyrannical. We want something oppressive. We are like fascists. We just want to, silence people. We're not
kill people or whatever, right?
Kill people. Yeah. Anything. I don't know. I don't know where they get these ideas.
Right.
But if someone asks me, and I've said this many times, if someone asks me what kind of society I want, what is nationalism? Well, nationalism is a society where you don't have to lock your front door all the time, where you don't have to lock your car and worry that it's going to be stolen all the time, where you can let your kids just go out and play and worry. You don't have to worry because, you can trust your neighbors because they are similar to yourself, and where you don't have to worry about crime all the time. And that is the kinds of societies that are just completely pushed aside in the multicultural world.
Let me add for you if you don't mind. Because always in that, when that argument is made, they whip out the straw man, which is, well, you're saying it would be a utopia and perfect just because of these things? Like, no, of course not. And of course there would be issues. And of course Sweden had issues before we became an ethnically homogenous nation. But in comparison, you can't even compare the differences now. And the fact is that now we're dealing with a society, with a culture, with a way of life for people in Sweden and all these other countries where every interaction, every potential mistake in terms of your interaction with another individual will now be filtered through the lens of racism. If you go into a corner shop, you have a difficult day, you're irritated or whatever, and you're sneering at someone, or you're not, you know, welcoming or open or whatever it is, that's going to be filtered through racism. Oh, it's because the corner shopkeeper, he was from Iraq and he just arrived 15 years ago to Sweden or whatever, right? And so instead, if you had an ethnic homogenous nation, you would never be able to use the excuse of race. Like, if this is my point. If society tells us that racism is the highest sin that we can commit, essentially, right? Then we are effectively creating more and more racism by creating multi-ethnic societies. Now, it's not that they want this to be perfect by any means. I think you're right when you talk about this too, that the security detail, the money that they can pour into these programs and integration and diversity quotas, and the police can be militarized to try to keep order in all of this stuff. Those are all beneficial aspects to the elite, the leaders and stuff like that too. But regardless, from my point of view, like, yes, we're not saying everything would be perfect, but it sure as hell would be much better than now. And you wouldn't not be able to use racism as an excuse. A homeland for everybody, that's what we want, right? Somewhere where they belong, with a people where they don't feel uncomfortable. They're not a suppressed minority or anything like that. The solution, of course, that they have is to just either, well, mix everybody out, or at least remove white people altogether out of the picture, because that's part of the game plan here. That's far as I can see anyway.
Yeah. It's like I had a conversation with a girl I met in a bar in Budapest once, and she said that her family, because I told her that I live in, you know, Sweden, and she said that, yeah, her family, her grandfather fled to Sweden during communism in the 56th revolution. And I said, well, yeah, now the shoe's on the other foot, because now Scandinavians are fleeing to Eastern Europe, to former communist parts of Europe, because now we have the communism. It's like, you know, Tom Sunich, he said that, you know, communism fell in the East because it was more fully implemented in the West. And that's really true, because we have the full-on repression and police state that's just expanding. The UK, Germany, it's just horrible. It's just absolutely horrible. And when people... You know, these mega cities, these multicultural, multi-ethnic states, rootless multi-ethnic states, they breed nihilism, alienation. People are alienated. They just isolate themselves. They don't want to be a part of that society. You know, when people ask me what kind of society I want, what is nationalism, I can just point to Estonia. Just go visit Tallinn. You'll see sort of what I want. There is an actual example. You know, communists, they always say that wasn't real communism, because all communism has done throughout the ages is just fail. All communist states have failed, and so they just, you know, give the tired old cliche that that wasn't real communism. Let's just try it again. No, I can point to real successful ethno states. That's what I want. That's what I want for my people. You know, I want a society where government people, where a minister can come to a conference and he can just walk in there like a regular Joe. You know, he doesn't have to have an armored car and a dozen bodyguards, and, you know, there's all kinds of you know, minesweeping or whatever before he enters a building, because you don't need that in a normal society. We need to establish normal societies for white people again.
Yeah.
So I think that's just a perfect example. It was just very harmonious, very beautiful. I mean, Tallinn Old Town is a medieval
old
city.
Showing it's some of that right
most
here. Yeah, beautiful.
Beautiful cities in the world. It's absolutely fantastic. Walking in a fairy tale. So that was one day, and then we had the torchlit march. 10,000 nationalists with torches celebrating their independence from the Soviet Union and singing nationalist songs, and all were explicitly nationalists. People from all parts of society, all ages, and so on. They had three counter demonstrators protesting who were yelling, "It's the current year. It's 2020. Stop this nationalism. You also want the police state," or something. I don't know. But I don't know what they were protesting against. But yeah, that was the reality. That was the reality. So I filmed.
Yeah, go ahead. Finish that.
I filmed some interviews there. It was absolutely brilliant. I filmed an interview with one of our guys, Ruben Kalep, who is a member of parliament. We filmed the interview in the parliament building. It was their independence days where everyone was free from work. So we had the whole parliament building for ourselves. And we did this interview. It looks really cool. It's going to come out any of these days now, maybe in the weekend. So that was just awesome. And I even filmed, there was a speaker that I was very impressed by. Her name is Gemma. She is a 15-year-old girl. She's like a 15-year-old, you know, Jeanne d'Arc, standing up for nationalism and speaking out. Very intelligent girl. And I did an interview with her as well. So it was just a very, very beautiful experience seeing a normal country like I remember when I was a kid and like I want to establish again for future generations. Because that's one of the things that just breaks my heart, that the normal societies that I took for granted when I was a kid and that has successively been taken away from us and completely annihilated is not going to be an option for future generations. And that's why we're doing what we're doing.
Yes, absolutely. And well, there's a couple of points here. One of them, of course, is that I hope that these Baltic countries, and I think they do, they are equipped with a different, they have a different, since they didn't go head first into this experiment that we now have in Western Europe and America too, Australia, many parts of the West. We have an open-air experiment, a petri dish, essentially. No one knows the long-term effects of this. Actually, we do. We can look historically, but, you know, people never do that, right? This time we'll make it. As they say, this time we'll pull it off, right? Now we have now we can militarize the police enough to keep and put microchips in their brains to stop people from having emotions about, you know, when we're destroying their societies. But jokes to the side, I hope they can look to Sweden, to Norway, to Germany, Britain, and stuff like that, and see, like, what they're doing, we don't want that. Do you see what I'm saying? That they remain vigilant, that they remain in a position of being very wary of who is trying to come into their country and change their politics, their structure. Because at this, to a certain extent, we know, Frode, that they don't like examples, right? If these countries can remain and stand as examples of ethnically homogenous functioning societies, that will serve as an inspiration to Sweden, to Norway, to Germany, to the UK, even to America to a certain extent, although it's much, much, much bigger. And so I just have this feeling that soon enough, the globalists are going to try to get their claws on these countries and suck them dry and ruin them. What do you feel about that?
That was actually the theme of my speech, and that's why they invited me, and that's what's so impressive with these people, because not only do they have a real-world ethnostate that's functioning and beautiful, but they have nationalists ruling the ethnostate, and they have the foresight and the intelligence to see that this it can't be taken for granted. This is something that they have to protect in order to preserve it. This isn't just something that they will have automatically. And they've been forced to you know, fight for their independence in the past. That's why they invited me, because I've been in the wilderness. I'm used to the chaos that we have today. So I can give them the warnings. I can tell them what's coming if they don't protect their own borders. And I think that's that, you know, that's what's so impressive with a country that already has what it wants, but it still has the foresight to build a metapolitical movement that's going to build a strong intellectual foundation for preserving that peaceful and harmonious ethnostate. So, you know, they're ruled by nationalists, and they say we're not going to accept any sort of EU mass immigration. They're going to protect their country, and I, you know, that has to be the objective of any nationalist, any white nationalist anywhere in the world, to support an effort of an actual ethnostate in Europe today. Because obviously we can't take it for granted, because it's been taken away from us. So yeah, we have to follow their example, and we can see what can be, you know, all the good things that come from that.
Do you know the EU membership status of all three countries, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania? Are they all members of the EU?
They are all members of the EU.
They are, okay. I forget. I remember, I think it was 10 years ago, one of the states, I haven't kept up with that, but mm-hmm. that's obviously a danger, right? Because they have been trying so hard, the EU, to allocate migrants to all these various countries. Of course, Hungary, they've been attacking vehemently for a long time now for rejecting this. But I'm sure that there will be some kind of pressures or sanctions put on them for this. Again, it's going to be very interesting to see how this political kind of gameplay play, you know, really transpires here, because I think that the EU is far from over, and they're certainly going to want to try to suppress them in some kind of capacity. Do you know if what the pressures are like at this stage on these various countries, and if they can just simply say no, and that's been good enough for up to this point, maybe?
Yeah, I actually asked that question when, like I said, the finance minister, Martin Helme, when he gave a speech, I said, obviously, this event or this thing wouldn't be possible in the West. I mean, they would do anything to stop us. So has there been any attempt to put pressure on you to adapt to the mass immigration replacist policy of the EU and you know the rest of the Western agenda? And he said, and that was quite interesting. He said that no, I mean that he has been received very politely in the EU, because he thanked Hungary and Poland for taking the brunt of the attack. They have taken the beating and they have, you know, stood firm and said that they're not going to accept mass immigration. So there has been established some sort of balance, even within the EU, where the sort of replacist ideology has been forced to accept that no, nationalism and national populism, that's not just a fad that's going to disappear next year or something. It's a thing that's here to stay. That's what people actually want, and they've sort of they've sort of accepted it. So they've accepted, you know, to some extent, that they're not going to be able to force their will on everyone else, that they actually have to respect that some people won't participate in this multiracial experiment.
So I wonder if we, to our detractors and stuff like that too, and I know they will. I mean, they demonize countries as being racist, or it's too white and stuff like that. It's like certain states in the U.S., you know, the state is too white, we have to change that, that's bad, whatever, white man bad. But essentially, our detractors would have to start demonizing an entire country, entire countries, and say, because again, if we can propose this as a model for what we want, and again, what we once had, I know that they're trying to rewrite history and say, well, it's not like that, or what you want is not it's not this. It's I've seen arguments where they say, well, be wary. I think it was an article. It was fascists. They clean up your streets. They make the economy good, and they do all these wonderful things, so that they can just like put you in jail and torture people that they don't like and stuff like that. But it's always remarkable to me that somehow then they claim that these ideologies that are so dangerous managed to pull something off, which they couldn't have done in 100 years. That it's like, oh, you're saying you can get good schools, you can clean up the streets, you can make it orderly again, and high trust and all these things. I thought that those were impossibilities that all these other political ideologies have struggled to perform, you know, to execute for all those years. But my main point is, demonize these countries then, right? Because that's what we want, and it's not out of bounds. These are normal, healthy people that look out after their own, and that's what we want, right?
Yeah, I mean, you really have to ask yourself, why are we demonized as criminals? Why are we treated as criminals when all we want is an open discussion about the problems that we have in the West, and all we want to accomplish and achieve and have in the end is a country pretty much like little nice Estonia or Latvia, you know? That's all we want. We don't want any weird totalitarian society. We just want a normal country for ourselves. And why is that bad? Why is that evil? Why are we treated as criminals because we want a country where you don't have to have a police state in some mega city so that rich people can live in gated communities and the rest of the country is just chaos, and we just have a normal society with the only basis that can provide harmony and peace in a society, and that's ethnic homogeneity, where you are part of the same tribe and the same interests.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's, I mean, it's, I don't, you know, it's they don't want to see the truth again, because it's they're not really they're disingenuous, right? It's not about creating good societies. It's not about that. Some naive people on the surface, of course, might think that, well, we just need to execute, you know, this program, multicultural program, in the right way, or just it always becomes. See, there's always it's interesting too, because the way that kind of they scapegoat us is the way that they claim that we scapegoat, let's say, immigrants or something like that, right? That there's always this parallel of things that we get accused for is the very things that they do, for example. And I would say many people that I know anyway and talk to every day, they don't. It's not that they hate the one immigrant that came to their country and you single someone out and they're the enemy and stuff like that. No, I mean, most of our people are aware of the political agenda. They're aware of the woke capitalists that are benefiting from opening the borders. They can drive down the wages. We criticize these major global transnational corporations as much as the left do for these kinds of things. Well, the left don't anymore, actually. They're in the pockets now together on that, but they don't say anything anymore. That's my point. We criticize politicians that have these aspirations, that think that they're going to get ahead by promoting some kind of wonderful utopian multicultural society. But the point is, they are scapegoating us, and I think that their solution in the future, if the more this multicultural experiment fails, they will continue to not only blame white people, but specifically nationalists, specifically people that speak up against this, people who bring attention to the problem. Those are going to be considered the problem, and I wouldn't put it past these people to start putting people in camps and re-education programs and prisons and whatever else to try to enforce their little pipe dream of a multi-ethnic society. Where do you think this is going?
Yeah, I mean, they are insane, the people running the society and our society running the West. And like you say, they are always shooting the messenger. They're always shooting the messenger. If you point to a problem that existed before you were born, even, or you know, in some cases, then you are the problem. You are the problem because you are noticing it, and that's just complete insanity. And you know, there are endless examples of where people have been harmed badly. Like, for example, there is a famous example in Sweden where a girl was it's an iconic example, really, where a girl was killed by her black boyfriend, and the girl's father, who had his daughter killed, started an anti-racist organization, because the absolutely worst thing that could happen is that someone noticed the pattern and wanted to prevent it from happening again. So the worst thing is if someone notices the problem with this and you know wants to bring attention to it and wants to debate it and to prevent it from happening again. No. The absolute most important thing is that it doesn't matter if my son is sacrificed and he's killed and humiliated, or my daughter is raped or murdered. The important thing is to keep the replacist program continuing. You have to continue the replacism, you know, this ideology of us being replaced as a people. That's the most important thing. Yeah. Everyone who notices problems with that, they are the problem.
They're shooting
the messenger. It's just complete insanity, and these people are just completely insane. But like I said, seeing is believing. It's much better than I describing some sort of philosophical theory about something.
Go visit.
If you want to see nationalism in action, go visit. And think to yourself, not even you can have this. You had this. All of the European countries had something very similar to this just a few decades ago.
Exactly.
And it's been taken from us, and we can have it again. We should have it again.
And this always bugs me, right? Because this is the American influence of the nationalist movement, right? To a certain extent, that it's, you know, people talk about an ethno state. Oh, they want an ethno state, blah, blah, blah. You know, the counter arguments come, you know, talking about the American environment of the alt-right or, you know, identitarians and stuff like that. And it's like, well, sure, but no, not really. Like, we already have ethno states exist. It's not some pipe. Japan is an ethno state. China is an ethno state. The Baltic states, those are ethno states. Iceland, that's an ethno state. These are functioning, existing ethno states. Sure, they might have a couple of immigrants, but again, I wouldn't have a problem with that, to be honest. I don't like. I wouldn't set up some kind of, despite what our detractors say, I wouldn't set up some, you know, racial laws or something like that, like Israel has. It's like, I understand that people travel. It's a globalized world. People do fall in love. Stuff happens. What I'm against is that it's like the over the top promotion. This is demonization if you want to preserve yourself. That kind of stuff. And the propaganda around it. Let people be. And I think most people would want to have, well, both kids that looks like them, but also understand that it's more safe and a better environment overall. Living in a country where you have, you're ethnically homogenous, it would be safer. No one would be picked on, etc. All these kinds of things. But again, shit happens, right? It's okay. Like, some people fall in love, but they want to go to another country and get married or something, right? That, sure, whatever. But it's this idea that it's like, well, no, you want to have racial laws and prevent people from, you know, just travel, no tourism. They would just lock everything down. But the point is, ethnostates have existed for all this time. That's all that we've had all this time. And there's still functioning examples that are real and that are functioning. And that's all that we have to look for. So it's not that it's not one country where all white people are going to go and live one day. We're like, no, we need to restore the countries that we have. We need to repatriate. We need to deport, frankly, people that are that hate the country that they come to and hate and resent the people that let them into this country, right? Like we have in Sweden. We'll talk actually in the second hour a little bit about some of these like humiliation crimes and robberies that have happened towards young Swedish kids as an example, right? Where there's almost a rite of passage amongst migrant criminal gangs to kidnap essentially and humiliate on camera young Swedish kids. I mean, that's ethnic hatred. It's racism, it's discrimination on every level. Yet you have an establishment that looks the other way. We'll go into that in the second part, but I'm just mentioning now and dropping that as an idea of like, those are some of the negative consequences to the multiculturalism that we're seeing. But you don't have an establishment that recognizes that or even talk about that. It only spreads through alternative media, essentially. But Frode, before we take a break here, we're coming up towards the end of the first part. Let's talk about some of the stuff that you have upcoming here, and we can plug that properly. There's a debate coming up. There are conferences and everything else. So go ahead and talk to us about some of that stuff.
Sure. We're going to have a conference. The next Skanza Forum is coming up on the 2nd of May in Zagreb, Croatia. And the reason we're going to have it in Zagreb, Croatia, you know, the Skanza Forum is originally an idea to have conferences in Scandinavia and Norway, Denmark, and Sweden. But we're going to Zagreb now because one of our speakers, Jared Taylor, is banned by these totalitarians from the Schengen area. So
Poland of all countries.
By based Poland, yeah. Man. Yeah. It's embarrassing. It's just embarrassing. Yeah. You know, us totalitarian. He was banned, and the accusation was that he was representing a totalitarian ideology, you know, screaming out in pain as they strike you, as they always do. Yeah. So yes, we're gonna be in Zagreb, Croatia. It's gonna be a debate between Jared Taylor and E. Michael Jones about the topic, is race an important reality or a fiction? Because I saw videos with E. Michael Jones saying that race is a fiction. We're going to talk more about that maybe after the break, but just very quickly, we're going to have that debate, and people are on fire. You know, the comments are on fire. We have thousands of comments. People are arguing in the comments. They have chosen sides, and it's like a title fight, you know, in boxing or something. These both men have very, you know, passionate supporters, and it's going to be very exciting. It's going to be super exciting. We also have Greg Johnson, and we have Ed Dutton, Millennial Woes, and myself. We're going to speak on the 2nd of May in Zagreb, Croatia. And we also have a fundraiser for organizing this event, because I've organized, you know, people always ask me, what can I do? I can't put my face out there or my name out there like, you know, like you do or like other people do, but I want to help out. So, yeah, I mean, my experience is that this is the eighth Skanza Forum that I'm organizing. I've organized 10 conferences in total over the period of half a decade. And my experience is that they never break even financially without the help of supporters. So that's why we have this fundraiser to make it happen, make it possible. So if you're out there and you want to do something, but you can't be on the front line, then you can support people who are on the front line, because it really is needed for these things to be sustainable in the long run. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and you can sign up by sending me an email to info@skanzaforum.com. And if you want to learn more about the event, we have a promo video. Maybe we'll watch it in.
We'll
in
play
the
it at the
half.
End here. Yeah, we'll play it at the end of the first segment here. Yeah, definitely.
Great, great. So we have that promo video. It's up on Twitter. We have it on our YouTube channel. We have an announcement with all the information that's on Countercurrents. That has all the information about the upcoming event and how you sign up and so on. We have a vetting process. But the most important thing is that, if you want to contribute to the fundraiser, you can send a contribution with credit card or crypto, or you can just send me an email for more instructions, really. And also for signing up for the event, it's going to be a lot of fun. So send me an email to info@scanzaforum.com.
All right. Go ahead. Finish that.
No. Maybe we'll talk more about the details in the second half. I understand that we're sort of running out of time in the first part.
No worries. Yeah, no, that's fine. If there's anything else you want to mention about it, I wanted to sneak in that too, because maybe it was in the air. And obviously, I know that E. Michael Jones started talking about it, but I think it was about two and a half months. I actually had some things come in between, so I didn't follow through on it, but I had spoken to. Now, I wanted to do a debate, which is great that it's happening, because I had to put it off temporarily, but I had talked with Jared Taylor and Steve McNallan, because I wanted to talk about religion, spirituality, and white identity. And I wanted to have three other big names in there. And I yet had not asked E. Michael Jones. I didn't get around to that yet. And I'm sure he would have accepted too. But so this is, and I might still, do that afterwards or whatever, something like that. But it's great that this is happening. It's very important. I think a lot of people started to kind of, they've been attracted to E. Michael Jones's work because of that stuff, but I've heard a lot of his kind of, white identity is a trap and whatever. So that's good to kind of do something on that and kind of churn that out a little bit and see, so that people have a chance to, well, maybe not necessarily pick a side, but understand accurately both sides of this argument of what is it that is primarily important from my perspective. And again, we can kind of deep dive that a little bit more on the philosophical points in that in the second part. But my point has always been, and I'm of pre-Christian faith. I'm of the old Norse ways, and that's fine. I don't hate Christians. I don't have a problem with them. As much as I can, I try to avoid picking fights. And sometimes I know that people are just offended because you're talking about your faith and they see that as an attack on theirs or whatever. But I love my Christian brothers and sisters. I don't have a problem with them. My primary objective is not the preservation of a religion or a spiritual tradition. It's the preservation of the people that founded and came up with those spiritual traditions. That's my point. And that's the goal with it. So therefore, I think, what is it that's going to preserve? What is it that's at the root of one or the other? That's my point. I mean, I do think Christendom, as it turned out to be, obviously came from people of European descent. It didn't originate there, sure, but it came out of that environment and eventually became that. But if you do have a religious attitude that, well, it doesn't matter what skin color you are, we can just, many sub-Saharan African are Christians. You can open the border to them to Europe and you can transform your country and or your whole continent. And there still might be Christian, right? But it's like, but you won't have the same traditions, you won't have the same culture and all those kinds of things. So it's a very important topic, I think, to churn out so people can understand both sides, what's at the root and what's the primary thing to preserve in order to ensure that all the different traditions are preserved. So it's a very interesting debate. We can talk about that more in a second, but I'll dump a link down below to the event on Countercurrents. You get all the information, a lot of stuff there. We're going to play the little promo video right here at the end as well. Anything else you want to squeeze in here, Frody, before we talk about some of your other projects real quick too, like Guide to Culture and any websites or links you want to give out?
Sure. I'll just say quickly, because you asked me, we didn't have time to talk about it before the show, if this was related to your idea to have a debate between them. I didn't even know about that idea.
I think it was in the air, right, at that time. Must have been.
Yeah, the thing, how it started, I can just tell you very quickly the story. It was in the middle of December, so about 2.5 months ago, because I had recently watched a debate between Alexander Dugin and Bernard-Henri Lévy, and Dugin said that he believes in Franz Boas's social constructivist theories about race. He doesn't believe that race exists, and I thought, wow, I have to get this guy into a debate. So I was thinking, should I have him debate Well, maybe have a debate Jared Taylor, but then, you know, well, we can't have Jared Taylor over. So I was sort of thinking, well, so I talked to it with Greg Johnson, and Greg Johnson was interested. So I suggested to both Greg and Dugan that they debate each other. And then I thought, well, we have another guy who says that race doesn't exist. That's E. Michael Jones, because I've seen him say that in interviews, and you know, and also just to protest against the banning of Jared Taylor from the Schengen area.
Yeah,
I wanted, right. Just on principle, I wanted Jared Taylor, just because we can't accept their bullying tactics in attempt to silence us. We can't accept it. So we have to have Jared over again, because also, of course, because he's a great speaker. So that's why I contacted E. Michael Jones, sent him an email, you know, suggested this to him, and he was glad to accept immediately. And I suggested it to Jared, and he was also very excited. Yes, thank you for inviting me again, because he enjoys coming to my events as well. So and we can talk more about the details, but that's how nice. It started. It started, you know, by the issue itself and like people on opposite sides, and then sort of getting it all together. So yeah. but I'm very excited. Cool. Yes, like you said, Twitter, I have a Twitter now. People have been complaining that I don't have a Twitter, but now I've had Twitter for a couple of months. So you can find me twitter.com/Scanzaforum, I guess. And we have the video there, and the announcement is on Countercurrents. I have Guide to Culture, which isn't updated as frequently as I'd like to, because I've been traveling a lot, doing a lot of other stuff, but I like to put out videos about films and literature and culture with Tom Rausel, Greg Johnson, John Morgan. Lots of different people have been guests on the show. So those are my main projects that I'm involved in. And also I'm speaking at other events, because I'm not the only event organizer in this thing we have going, in this community we have going. We have other people organizing conferences in other countries as well, and we're like a family, really. So we go to each other and support each other's events, and I'm happy to speak at their events, and they come to my events, and it's we really have a great time. And the major thing with this is community building, because that's, you know, we can't sit and hide somewhere. We have to be out in the open and do this, and that's gonna, that has really attracted a lot of good people. So that's where you can find me.
Excellent. We'll have the Twitter up, as I said, the link, of course, to the the event as well. Zagreb, of course, beautiful place. Croatia, very, very lovely. I didn't know that they weren't in the Schengen zone, so that's interesting. That's good. There's still some places in Europe then that Jared can travel to, which is good. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break. We'll run the little promo video right here at the end, and we'll be back in part two. RedIceMembers.com, check out the second part. We're going to deep dive into some of the humiliation crime that's happened in Sweden. We're going to talk a bit more about this kind of from a, I guess, philosophical point of view, race, religion, you know, spirituality, traditions, that kind of stuff as well. So stay tuned, guys. We'll be right back.
Basically, there is no such thing as white. Race is not going to get you anywhere in this world. It's a fiction. And it's not only a fiction, it's a trap that's set by your enemies. Now it has taken on certain characteristics which have no connection whatsoever with behavior. None whatsoever. The difference between Africa and Europe is 1,000 years of Catholicism. If it weren't for the Benedictines and the Catholic Church, the Germans would still be chasing pigs through the forest of Germany.
Race is at the center of current political discourse, but there are still many people, even on the right, who claim that race doesn't really exist. Dr. E. Michael Jones has a PhD in American literature. He's the author of numerous books on the downfall of the West. He's a prominent spokesman for the Catholic cause, and he has a huge following on the right. So when I heard interviews with him where he said things like, race is a fiction, that only Catholicism can explain the difference in cultural accomplishment between countries like Germany and Tanzania in Africa, I immediately wanted to invite him to a debate at one of my events to see how he would defend those claims. And who better to debate him than Jared Taylor?
There's a whole host of beliefs in the United States today that I would categorize as so obviously wrong and stupid that only very, very intelligent people could persuade themselves that they're true. I'd say another one is the notion that race doesn't really exist. That when you see a black person and an Asian person, that's some sort of sociological optical illusion, that doesn't really exist. Race doesn't exist.
Both these gentlemen have accepted my invitation to fly in and do a live debate at the next Scanza Forum on the topic, is race an important reality or a fiction? This is scheduled to take place on the 2nd of May somewhere in Europe. But organizing an event like this isn't free. It takes both hard work and funding, so we need your support to pull it off. So if you want to support the Scanza Forum, and if you want to make sure that we can make this happen, please follow the link to our donation page and send us a contribution. This is going to be a memorable event, so thank you for your support.